From Riverside Health System, this is the Healthy You Podcast, where we talk about a range of health-related topics focused on improving your physical and mental health. We chat with our providers, team members, patients, and caregivers to learn more about how to maintain a healthy lifestyle and improve overall physical and mental health. So let's dive in to learn more about becoming a healthier you. Really excited to have with me today in the Healthy You studio, Dr. Eric Stone. Dr. Stone is with Riverside Hayes Medical Group, and we're going to be talking about living with diabetes, insights on prevention, management, and everyday resilience. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. It's my very much a pleasure to be here. Right. It's a big topic that I spend quite a bit of my clinic time trying to help people with.
Absolutely. So thank you. Thank you for that. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart as well. We either know someone or, you know, have encountered someone who is living or managing the disease.
Yeah.
So welcome back, or welcome. And you always can come back to the studio at any given time. This podcast is going to give valuable information for individuals to live a healthier lifestyle. More empowered lifestyle, because knowledge is power. I'm Frankie Myers, and I'm your host, and I look forward to talking more about this with you. This condition actually affects over 37 million people in the United States alone. Diabetes, whether you're living with diabetes, know someone who has it, or want to understand more about it, this episode is definitely for you. So Dr. Stone, tell me about how you ended up in medicine, and then specifically what drove your passion around diabetes.
So ended up in medicine. My dad was actually a healthcare administrator.
Okay.
So I always grew up around the medicine world, and he was in the military. So I became a military doc.
Okay.
And did that for 25 years and took care of healthy, athletic people who break things. And not a whole lot of diabetics.
Okay.
And then I spent about 15 years doing executive medicine, okay, spending more time in the boardroom than the exam room. And when I went back to clinic, I realized I didn't know much about diabetes. Mm-hmm. It was kind of my weak point. And so I decided to make my weak point into my strong point.
I like that. Yeah.
And studied up on it quite a bit, because it's the people I was taking care of, that's what they needed. And continue to study on it, and actually just finished a course in reversal of insulin resistance and in managing type 2 diabetes. So I'm excited to be here. Interestingly, part of the course I was at last week, they mentioned even scarier numbers than the 37 million. They kind of estimated that 13% of Americans now have type 2 diabetes or diabetes of any kind. And another 36% of Americans are pre-diabetic or insulin resistant.
Wow.
When you add that up together, that's 50% of Americans. This problem's huge.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. To give our listeners a little bit more of a perspective, let's start out by first just defining, what is diabetes?
Okay. So diabetes is the body's inability to regulate its glucose. It's broken down into two main types. We have very interesting names, type 1 and type 2.
Right. Yes.
So type 1 is basically the what most people consider childhood diabetes, because it happens more in younger individuals before age 30.
It
is the lack of insulin. Your body's no longer producing insulin because the organ, the pancreas that produces it, something has happened to it. Quite often it's an autoimmune disease where insulin is no longer being produced.
Okay.
Again, typically happens in people before they reach age 30. There's kind of a subgroup that happens in older people called latent onset autoimmune diabetes that happens in older individuals beyond age 30. Tends not to come on quite as quickly as the juvenile diabetes, and can often get missed. I know I have missed it before, but that's basically kind of the type 1 group, and probably accounts for 10% of all the diabetics. The bigger group, accounting for 90% diabetics, are your insulin resistant group. These are folks who they're making the insulin, the body's just not sensitive to the insulin. Kind of the analogy I use is if your cell was a room,
okay,
and the room's got a door, the door has a lock on it, and insulin's the key that unlocks the door. In people with type 2 diabetes, there's something stuck inside that lock that the key won't work. And so that's kind of the type 2 diabetes. Gestational diabetes happens in ladies during pregnancy, and it tends to be more of that insulin resistance type, although it's treated with insulin because of the health risk to some of the medicine for the baby.
So when you, and I know a little bit about this because diabetes runs in my family. It's something I've been tackling, you know, my whole life. I actually live like a diabetic, but I'm not, to avoid or putting it off as
great
long
strategy
as possible. Are there things that you can do? The lock is stuck. Are there things that you can do to get the lock open, or for people to prevent their lock from getting stuck? So, you know, most people think I can never have a carb. I can never enjoy the foods that I love. What are your thoughts around that?
So let me, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
Let me just say that the type 1 diabetics,
right,
the people that don't have insulin, you can't undo that.
Gotcha.
They're going to need insulin. There are lifestyle things that they can do to improve their health and actually make their insulin needs less. They can have, because of what they do in lifestyle, they can have what I call double diabetes.
Right.
They have an insulin resistance on top of type 1 diabetes. But to your question, what can I do to maybe reverse the lock,
yes,
or prevent it? I think it has to come down to what we understand about insulin resistance, and that will kind of go with a strategy. There's actually lots of different processes going on. There's oxidative stress. There's what we call lipotoxicity. Basically, the fat cells in our body start creating this inflammatory toxic cascade that eventually starts attacking the pancreas, the very cells that produce the insulin, and a whole cascade. But the thing that I think probably is the easiest for people to wrap their head around, and if you just kind of address that, everything else falls in place, is the process of called intermyocellular lipids.
Okay.
Basically, what we've discovered is what we think is causing the majority of the insulin resistance. And, you know, long story short, it's fat.
And I'm laughing because I just had my physical.
Yeah.
And she said, she touched my belly and she said, carbs.
So, I mean,
you know?
Yeah.
We've
long known that, you know, having excess fat produces insulin resistance, and there's a belief that insulin resistance produces excess fat. So it's kind of the chicken and the egg argument. What we do know is excess calories and will kind of create that whole cascade.
That makes sense.
And this happens actually quickly. It happens actually in 1 or 2 days. Of consuming the sort of excess calories that the insulin resistance happens. I've seen some studies that it happens as quick as 3 hours. So I think to understand some of this, there's a great study that was done, actually a couple studies, but the one that really comes to mind was a study that was done almost 100 years ago in Texas.
Okay.
Among healthy medical students, where they were trying to see, you know, kind of how diets affect insulin resistance. And so they took these healthy medical students with no medical problems, and they fed them horrible diets. By the way, I do not recommend either one of these diets. So one group, they fed, you know, all these simple carbohydrates, you know, sugar, pastries, all these starches with potatoes and bread, and that's all they ate for 2 days.
All the good stuff.
Yeah, that's all they ate for 2 days. The other group, they fed a high saturated fat diet. They fed them eggs, mayonnaise, whole cream, donuts. I mean, just all these high fat diets. And then after that, they basically did the same test they do on pregnant ladies looking for gestational diabetes. They gave them a sugar drink, and they tested their blood at intervals like 30 minutes, 1 hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, to see if they could get their, how they would respond on naturally getting their sugars back down to normal.
Right.
No surprise, their sugars went up right away after drinking a sugary drink, as you would expect. The carbohydrate group, though, at the end of 2 hours, had returned their sugar back to normal at 100.
The really?
Really. I know, it's contraindicate.
Right.
Counterintuitive.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's what confuses a lot of people. The man behind the curtain, the wizard behind the curtain, the high fat group, their sugars just kept going up and up and up. And at the end of 2 hours, it was twice normal at 200.
Wow.
They had not been able to return to normal. So basically, they showed from this diet that they, in healthy people, they caused insulin resistance. It would take us, you know, almost 100 years to figure out what's going beyond that. And like I said, there's lots of different processes going on there between the different oxidative stresses and mitochondrial stresses and toxicity to the pancreas. But this enteromyocellular lipids, basically these fat molecules inside your muscle cells and your liver cells, are gumming up the lock.
Wow.
They're producing the insulin resistance. And that basically comes from either your body carrying too much weight itself, and so it, even when you're asleep, it's kind of releasing these fat particles.
Okay.
And or you're intaking excess calories, producing fat from those calories, could be starches, could be fat, or you're consuming a high amount of mostly saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the fat from the animal products, your cheeses, your dairy, your meats, particularly the red meats,
right.
And your processed meats, bacon, okay. sausages,
yes.
lunch meat,
deli
et cetera.
Meat and all that stuff. Yeah.
And seems to be the bigger problem. The unsaturated, less saturated fats seem to be lesser of a problem. Those are some of your oils and stuff, your vegetable oils. The exception, I would say, would be your tropical oils, your palm oil, your coconut oil. Those are fairly high saturated and probably
okay.
need to be avoided.
Okay.
So those are some things, dietary-wise, that I think people can do to reverse or, better yet, prevent. By the time somebody starts showing signs of diabetes or pre-diabetes, it's kind of estimated that they've already lost 50% of their ability to regulate their sugar. They've done enough damage that it's now starting to show up with our tests. Our tests just aren't sensitive enough to see it that early. So if you want to try to turn the curve, you want to do it early. If you wait too long,
there's no coming back.
Well, it's less likely. I won't say
okay.
there's no weight coming back.
Right.
They certainly, we have proven that you can put diabetes, type 2 diabetes, in remission.
Okay.
You can reverse insulin resistance. Your chances of doing that are much better the earlier you do it
okay.
because
That's
of that
good.
Stuff.
That's
so,
good information.
You know, by the time your house is on fire, going around and blowing out a couple candles isn't going to do it.
Right. You got to get out.
You got to get real serious.
Right,
so
right.
The further you are in the diabetes, the more intensive, I would say, the changes need to be. If you think you're at risk for diabetes and you want to play a little bit on the side with the stuff, you're more likely to be successful. But the closer you get to it, the more intensive it needs to be. And I talked about diet.
Yes.
Talked about weight. A few statistics. You know, just carrying weight. You know, BMI is a measurement we use.
I feel like that range keeps, every time I'm close to the target, it changes and it gets lower and lower.
Well, I've got the numbers here if you want to start comparing.
I believe you.
If people want to know what their BMI is, I brought the chart. But you know, so a normal BMI is 25 and below, but even at 25, or excuse me, yeah, even at about 25, it's about your relative risk of diabetes is about twofold, or two up. Less than a BMI of 23, which is kind of on the lower side of normal,
right.
That's sort of a one relative risk. When you start getting into the obese category, which is 30 to 35, it's about relative risk of 20. 35 and above is almost 40 relative risk.
Wow.
So there's definitely a relationship.
Yes.
And, you know, unfortunately, 43% of the American population is obese. And then the rest, 73% is either obese or overweight. So like I said, we've got a big problem.
We do.
There are other things.
Thank you, too, for breaking that down. That's very helpful. And knowledge is power.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
I'm sorry. You were going to add something.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, so I focus on diet. And absolutely, that is a factor. I think there's probably two other big factors that would be worth focusing on. I spend a lot of time on diet because, no kidding, that's where the money is.
Yes.
I would say activity, or better yet, inactivity, is probably the other big factor. I've got it.
What is the activity goal? I mean, you know, age appropriate,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is it 3 to 4 days a week?
Yeah.
You know, 30 minutes brisk walking? You know, you hear various things around that.
Everything helps. The guidelines are moderate activity of 150 to 300 minutes a week.
Okay.
Moderate activity, to give yourself an idea, is, you know, would be a brisk walking to the point. You can talk, but you can't carry on full sentences. You got to take some breaks with it.
Right.
Whereas a vigorous activity would be like you're running and jogging. You're only getting a couple words out.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that's kind of it. Now, if you're able to sing as you're walking, you're not walking briskly enough.
Okay. That's
so,
a good gauge.
So 150 to 300, certainly more is better, is the target range, combined with at least two or more episodes of resistance strength training.
Okay.
What's more interesting is the inactivity, basically sedentary, seems to have even a bigger risk of developing type 2 diabetes. They estimate each hour of sitting, your odds increase by 4%.
Oh my goodness!
So they found that, you know, even doing small activity, just getting up and moving around during the day, seems to help lower your metabolic risk. They say that people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic, you know, after you eat, just get up and take a small walk.
Okay.
You know
That's doable.
I talked about the insulin resistance, that door and that key. There's a secret passage that's independent of insulin.
Okay.
And it's called exercise. it really does. The exercise, through mechanisms I don't quite understand, activates that same glucose channel that lets the sugar in, independent of insulin. We know that with type 1 diabetics who don't have insulin. Whenever they exercise, they actually have to be kind of careful that they don't bottom their sugars out too much, because they'll actually get their sugar down. So activity or exercise would be probably the second biggest thing.
Okay.
And then the third biggest thing I would say would be sleep.
Wow.
Now, you had Dr. Givens on here.
Can
I just say something about
yes, you can. About, absolutely.
It's just a quote that I want you to remember, because I get a lot of people who come to me of, you know, I can't get my sugar under control because I can't exercise, or I can't get my weight under control because I can't exercise. You can't outrun a bad diet.
I like that.
I mean, seriously.
It's kind of there to stay, right?
Yeah, I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just saying this because I know how many calories I burn on the treadmill. When I run 3 miles of 5K, I only burn 500 calories.
Oh my goodness!
That's a medium French fry. you know, you can out eat your exercise in about 5 minutes. So diet is the key. Exercise is probably the second big one. And then sleep, which I got to be honest, I'm guilty of not doing as well as I should, but sleep actually plays a big factor
as
well.
How much sleep are you averaging?
I'm actually now getting probably 7 hours.
Is the ultimate 8 hours?
7 to 8 hours is the sweet spot.
Okay.
Dr. Gibbons was doing a podcast with you a little while. I got a chance to hear it.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting that he said the 6.5 is the absolute floor. And at least what I've seen in the, sort of the diabetic stuff holds that up.
That's spot on.
Yeah. So they actually found that that when people get a sleep debt below that by 30 minutes every weekday, their obesity risk goes up by 18%.
That's why I'm gaining weight.
That's over a 12-month period.
That's the sole reason.
And their insulin resistance goes up by 41%.
My goodness.
41%.
That's huge.
It is huge. And I didn't actually appreciate that until I started understanding a little bit more about sleep and the architecture and some of the restorative effects and the neural hormones that we need, our bodies need, and our brains need to recover.
Wow.
So.
That's great information. Thank you, Dr. Stone. Now, for someone who does receive a diagnosis, mm-hmm. What are the treatment options? And the information that you've provided is very helpful on if you have it, these are things that you can do, things to avoid it. But talk a little bit about that and how it's evolved over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so certainly if a type 1 diabetic, they're going to have insulin. There's just no around that. We don't have any other solutions right now. I did mention lifestyle plays an important factor and their insulin resistance as well. For a type 2 diabetic, I'm a firm believer lifestyle is the foundation. And when you read the recommendations from the American College of, it's not really academy, it's clinical endocrinologist.
Okay.
And the other sort of authoritatives on diabetes, and even the Heart Association, they all say the same thing. Start with lifestyle. They don't say much about it after that. It's like, you know.
Right. It's the lead in, right?
Eat good and exercise. Okay, thanks.
Yes, not that easy, right?
So I actually, that's why I've actually been doing a lot of studies in exactly the science behind that lifestyle, so I can try to help people and give them real goals to do, because it does make a huge difference. I actually have a list on my wall in my in my office of my patients who have put their diabetes in remission. They've come off all their medicine, and they're keeping their sugars under control and have been doing so for 3 months or longer.
Wow,
that's the definition of remission.
Well, you have a lot to do with that, so that's...
I'm just the coach, and I provide them information. It's up to them. They got to do the hard work.
Absolutely.
And so that's first and foremost. For type 2 diabetes, there are medications that try to help the underlying process, the insulin resistance. Almost everybody first gets tried on metformin. It's one of the first newer novel medications that gets at that insulin resistance. The older medicines of insulin and the sulfonylureas basically were just giving you more insulin, which wasn't the problem.
Right. So you weren't solving a problem.
You already had enough insulin. You had that insulin resistance. So metformin came out as sort of the first medicine, and we still use it quite a bit. It's a relatively safe medicine, not always well tolerated because of some of the GI side effects, and it's cheap. There's a lot newer medicines now coming on the market. Anybody who has turned on anything of media knows about the injectable GLP-1s associated with the weight loss. They are a huge finding and very powerful in diabetes and the weight loss, working on not only the insulin resistance, but some of the other stuff that's happening in the gut and microbe. They're reducing your appetite. They're slowing down the digestion. Another big category is the SGLT2s that works on the kidneys.
Okay.
the way it's explained to me that I like to understand is, you know, when we have type 2 diabetes, our bodies basically, our cells are starving because you can't get the sugar where it is. And as a defense mechanism, our bodies kind of go into this survival mode of basically trying to pull all the energy back in to include the sugar that should be in your urine. It's pulling it back into your body.
Yes.
And these newer SGLT2s basically stop that from happening, basically let you urinate out that extra sugar.
Okay.
And that also gets your sugars down and causes a little bit of weight loss itself. Okay. And both these class of medicines also have a lot of secondary benefit for heart and other functions, but they're terribly expensive. And they do carry some side effects that some people can't tolerate. So again, a plug for lifestyle. It's free and it's effective.
Yes, just discipline. Right?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And a good coach as a former athlete, that does make a difference. All right. Anything else, Dr. Stone?
Yeah, so that's probably the gist of it. I do want to kind of leave people with a few things to consider. One, if you're diabetic or pre-diabetic, please consider the Riverside Diabetes Education Program. They got a whole host of services to include weight loss. And they've been hosting a class on reversing insulin resistance and pre-diabetes, as well as helping type 2 diabetics. It's a month-long, I think, weekly class.
How do you get connected with that class?
Get your pencils out.
Okay.
All right.
Let me grab a pen myself.
The phone number is 757
234
4285. That's 757-234-4285. You can also see one of your providers who could refer you out there to them as well. If you can't make their classes or you just want to add something onto it, I often will direct my patients to a free website called fullplateliving.org. That's fullplateliving, all one word, .org. It's hosted by the Ardmore Health Institute. They're running off of a grant, so it is entirely free. There is no gimmicks. They're not trying to sell you something. They don't have an agenda. They're not going to bug you. What they have done, and it's not, this particular site is not diabetes specific. It's about healthy eating specific. They teach people through 8 training modules, and mostly these are videos, and you can just rocket through the videos to get the idea and gist. Once you finish their initial training module, it opens up the website for a whole lot of dietary related health issues like weight loss, diabetes, things that people might be interested in, and how different diets and strategies can affect that. But they want you to get the basic understanding before they'll open the website up to you. You just have to sign on. The most you'll get is a weekly email that gives you cool recipes.
Okay,
cool healthy recipes,
always
and,
nice.
And some encouragement. This is a no kidding, no gimmicks, a good deal out there. There are a couple other web organizations that will help coach people in diabetes, particularly in lifestyle stuff out there. They do. They charge a fee because that's how they make money. One's called Diabetes Undone. I think last time I checked, most of these are about $200 to $300 programs to do. The other one's called Mastering Diabetes. The first one, Diabetes Undone, is all training. There's no laboratory testing. The second one, Mastering Diabetes, has a lot of training and also includes getting some laboratory testing that you can do through whatever their third-party lab is. That second one, Mastering Diabetes, also has a particular area and focus for type 1 diabetics because the host of this is actually type 1 diabetics. So that's just a couple other resources out there. And if people like watching documentaries, which I do, I'm kind of a nerd, there's a great Netflix documentary, not about diabetes, but about healthy lifestyles, which, spoiler alert, will work for diabetes too. It's called Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones by Dan Buettler. He actually worked for National Geographic, and they basically found these five zones in the world where you just had this high concentration of 100-year-old people who are living healthy, very little dementia lifestyles. And they basically looked at, you know, what do they all have in common? It's quite interesting. So I actually got a chance to hear Dan Buettler talk last week as he recounted his stories. Again, not about diabetes, but after watching this little 4-series mini documentary, it's inspiring.
Okay.
And it has the same principles that will probably help you with diabetes.
Great information. I'm going to actually go through all of those things you outlined.
Okay.
For myself. And I just want to thank you for your passion and your commitment.
Oh, my pleasure.
And all the great work that you're doing. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, Dr. Stone, anytime you're welcome to come back. For those of you tuning in, we hope today's episode has been valuable in understanding diabetes and learning how to manage it effectively. Be sure to check out our show notes for additional resources. And don't forget to subscribe for more health insights on Healthy You.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy You. We're so glad you were able to join us today and learn more about this topic. If you would like to explore more, go to riversideonline.com.